At least 58 people now dead, more than 500 people wounded.
17 fires burning right now in the state, 5,700 structures destroyed, at least 35 people dead.
I mean, this was a massive church just outside of San Juan with a congregation of 3,000 people. Maria just shredded this building.
ISIS released a new video today showing the execution of 21 Coptic Christians kidnapped in Libya.
Two suicide bombings killed more than 40 people on one of the holiest days on the Christian calendar.
North Korea fires yet another missile, but Pyongyang claims this one will be able to hit the U.S. mainland, striking cities like Los Angeles, Denver, even New York and Boston.
They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast, things that never change: God and His Word. Randy Reams is pastor of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. Join Pastor Randy now as he shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
First Samuel 15, verses 1 through 3. I know, that's a really short piece, but God took me somewhere so I couldn't cover the whole thing. First Samuel Chapter 15, verses 1 through 3. Then Samuel said to Saul, "The Lord sent me to anoint you as king over his peoples, over Israel. Now therefore listen to the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he set himself against him on the way while he was coming out of Egypt," or Israel was coming out of Egypt. "Now go and strike Elimelech, utterly destroy all that he has. Do not spare him. Put to death both man, woman, child, infant, ox, sheep, camel, and donkey. You may be seated." Some of you might have noticed that we sort of skipped over there real quick. Chapter 14, verses 47 through 52. And really, because that's just a generalization again of Saul. It tells who his dad was, who his grandfather was, who his uncle was, who his captain of the host was, who his children were, what his wife's name were, this kind of thing, and that he was king. And so it does say this, though, in 52, which would have been right before what we read today, that all the days of Saul, when Saul saw any mighty man and any valiant man, he attached him to his staff. So when he would find himself a great man of some sort, valiant for battle, he'd put him on his military staff. And then it tells us here that Samuel comes to Saul and tells him he's supposed to attack the Amalekites, okay? So let's take a moment to find out who they are. And you got to understand the Amorites, the Amalekites, the Gibeonites, the Hivites, the Termites, the Perizzites. Those guys, there's many of them that are grouped into one group we would call the Canaanites, all right, type of thing. They're often synonymous. They're all in some way related to each other. So I have three brothers, there's four of us. So even though related, we would establish separate city-state, just like Israel did when they had the various tribes, the Gadites, the Danites, the Judah, and so on, and they would have territories in this. Even though if you just attacked the Danites of Israel, you're still attacking Israel, are you not? So there are particular tribes that are often referred to in the same way, okay? The Philistines aren't in that group, by the way. Just to let you know, Philistines aren't included in that. They came in by boat and landed on the shores there. The Babylonian inscriptions call these particular groups of people the Suti, or the Egyptians, the Situ. And so there's this thing called the Amoran tablets that refers to this group of people, and basically by the term plunderers. So, and the idea that they were sort of like the Vikings that we would know in Western civilization, you know, these raiders that would come into areas and raid, okay? We know that according to Genesis 14, they've been around since Abraham, almost 1,000 years before. And Elimelech was the son of Elphaz, and his concubine Timna is the grandson of Esau, Jacob and Esau. So a lot, all these groups of that we're talking about are really are descendants of Esau, because Esau becomes what's literally father of the Edomites. So the Edomites is part of that group that's related. And the term Elimelech or became almost like a title, like the word Caesar. You know, he spoke of the emperor of Rome. Not every one of them was named Caesar, but that was the title. So basically, this idea refers to the descendants, particularly by tribe often, and the land that they attached themselves to. Now, it tells us here that Samuel tells Saul to go after the Amalekites for what they did. Well, what did they do? And this tells us in Exodus 17, it talks about this. But when the Israelites are coming out of Egypt and they're traveling through the desert, the wilderness, you always have the stragglers, the weak, the elderly, and that's sort of the way it refers to it off, the faint and weary. And these guys would come not attack the front, but would come pick off the weak, the orphan, the widow type stuff. Those that might be sickly and weak would come and attack them, all right? And you can read in Numbers 14, Deuteronomy 25. And so they wanted to wipe out the Israelites when they were just slaves coming out of Israel. So at this time, Moses looks to Joshua and says, this is Joshua's first battle as commander. Hey, go do something about these Amalekites that are picking off the weak. And so he goes to do that. Ehud and Judges, we covered Judges. Gideon and Judges fights against the Amalekites and some other groups. Later in chapter 10 of 1 Samuel, these same Amalekites come back and invade Negev and Ziklag. And there's a famous story there with David, okay? So I want you to understand this is an ongoing. Matter of fact, in Deuteronomy it says, you're going to be fighting these Amalekites from generation to generation. God's telling Saul here to go take care of these people so they don't become this ongoing, continual problem. And so we got to take a time here, though, to address a particular issue. I've done it before, but I think it's imperative that we do so, because right now, if you would go online or get a book somewhere, and I'll quote a couple today, on people's, I'll say, objections, criticisms of Christianity is just this type of thing. Defending God against such views is called a theodicy, just to let you know in apologetics. So first thing I want you to understand is God called them to get these people out of the promised land, Canaan land, Israel, whatever you want to call it today. But if people fled outside of Canaan, fled to Egypt, fled north, Israel did not follow them. They stayed relatively within their borders for the most part, as any of these people would flee. And we could see the same idea in Deuteronomy 20, and we did it at the time, okay? Among these people, don't put up with them. They're going to lead you into idolatry, sexual immorality, sorcery, all these things. Don't put up with them. But anybody, when you get further out, this calls it distant cities, if battle comes with them and you go to the city, you offer them a peace treaty first. Did you catch that? Israel's commanded by God. We talked about this back then, that you're supposed to offer them a treaty. So it isn't that kind of annihilation. You see this in particular in this story as we go on. There we would see in verse 6 is called the Kenites. Okay? The Kenites were relatives. Well, Zipporah, Moses' wife, was a Kenite, a Midianite. And we find that the Kenites did not try to influence at all Israel towards those ungodly things, okay? And they were friends of Israel. They settled near Jericho, eventually over in the Negev Desert. If you remember the story in Judges about Jael, who used a tent peg to get rid of the bad guy, she was a Kenite. Okay, so one of the things you see in this story is Saul sends the message. Now, watch this. If I'm going to attack another people, I don't tell them I'm coming. But because of God's rules, he sends a message to the Kenites saying, we're going to attack, you guys need to clear out. Now, the Kenites living in that same area, in some sense, are related to all these other people of the same race, same ethnic group, but the Kenites are allowed a more because... they were not, for one, they were friends with Israel in several different treaties, but they also didn't influence Israel in the area of sin. The Bible also tells Israelites, if a foreigner was living among you in peace, wasn't trying to get you to worship their gods, get into their witchcraft or so on like that, that you were supposed to treat them well. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 33 and 34. When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. The stranger who resides with you, shall be as a native among you, like one of your own. And you shall love him as yourself. Did you catch that? So how Israel was expected, all right, to allow people a chance to have a peace treaty, except for particular tribes, okay, groups of people, all right, and that if groups of people lived among you, example would be Rahab. Remember Rahab, story of Jericho? She comes and lives among the Jews, and she's supposed to be treated like family. Okay, but she wasn't trying to get Israel to go worship some idol, do divination, practice sexual immorality, or anything like that. So many people, when they read what we read today about Saul, what Saul was commanded to do, they blame God and accuse God of genocide. You must understand, this is what's called the fallacy of equivocation. I use a word over here to mean something, and then I continue my argument and I use the word differently over here. And I try to prove my logical statement by redefining the word in the middle of the argument. Okay? It's a logical fallacy of equivocation. So, genocide means what? Well, it's from the Greek word genos, okay, which basically means race. So we use genocide maybe when we're talking to Bosnia. We talk about genocide when we talk about the Holocaust. You want to annihilate an entire race. Is that what Israel was commanded to do? No. Because there were plenty of people, as we know today, if you went to Jordan, if you went to Syria, if you went to Arabia, you went to, all related, genetically, in that sense, all right, that we would say is an ethnic group. So they weren't told. They were talking particular people in a particular location they were supposed to get rid of. Richard Dawkins, who's one of the most famous atheists of our time, wrote in his 2000 book, a New York Times bestseller, by the way, called The God Delusion. Page 31, he calls God a racist, infanticidal, genocidal, capricious, malevolent bully because of scriptures like this. Because again, they use what's called the logical fallacy of equivocation. When we went to war, pick one, the Spanish, pick an American war. We weren't trying to kill every person of that race. We were trying to kill those who were doing harm to us. Correct? I don't think it's Vietnam. We don't call that a war, okay, or Korea. But we weren't trying to, okay? And I don't believe the Vietnamese or the Koreans were trying to kill every person that would be of whatever race we are. Because most of us are a mix about everything. So nobody calls that. When you have a set-out plan like Adolf Hitler did to get rid of a race, want to annihilate it off the planet, that's another story. And we see forms of that today around the world. And some will argue that they were trying to kill everybody of a particular religion. Not true again. You could be that religion outside of Canaan. Israel wasn't going out and trying to find you in Poland and bring you back to Germany and put you in a camp in that sense, okay? So again, they weren't trying to do that. But there are some issues we sort of have to deal with, okay, in this process, all right? First of all, it sounds like revenge. I want you to go get the Amalekites for what they did. Say, yes, that sounds like revenge. And it is. But here's the point. In Romans 13, it tells us that one of the purposes of government, that would be King Saul, okay, is an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Now, I'll ask you a question. You have a wrongdoer in our society, a serial killer. He's sentenced to death. They just wait for him to die, right? No. There's actually a person that has to pull the lever, push the switch, inject the needle. Am I right? Okay, so even in our culture, we use a person to avenge, if you will, punish the wicked. It is not that far. I don't know why we have a hard time with God using people to punish wicked people. We do it. And we see it all the time, though, where some guy is hurt people, robbing a bank, pointing a gun at people, and we don't blame the police officer when they shoot the guy. Man, you evildoer police officer. Well, some people might nowadays. Okay, it depends, I guess, what race that guy is, or perceived, I guess. All right? But we know that we understand that. Why doesn't Dawkins understand that God uses people now and he uses them then? If he doesn't even let somebody attack Dawkins' family and see if there should be any justice done or not. So we have to address that. The question is this then. Were the Canaanites, as a whole, general whole, an evil, wicked people? If God's using them to judge Israel to judge these guys, were they that? Well, in Leviticus, it tells us they practice abominable customs. I don't want to deal with all of them. And in Deuteronomy, it calls it detestable things 3 or 4 times in Deuteronomy 18. Here's the things that they practice: idolatry, witchcraft, soothsaying, sorcery, necromancy, and child sacrifice. Now, I want you to think about that today. Imagine you're a congressman or a senator, and in the intelligence briefing, you find out that some guy in some faraway place from us is killing children. Well, you know, I really can't do anything about it. That'd be cruel. Would we call that cruel? If we went and sent somebody to stop this guy from killing children in their religious practices. Now, here's the, and trust me, you don't think we would. Yes, we do. If you go to Central America, Mexico, the indigenous people there sacrifice their children. Oh, I am going to get in trouble for this. God couldn't use a conquistador to bring judgment on those people, could he? See, in our world today, we teach the conquistador was wrong, but the Aztec was okay. I've been to their temples there, folks. Not my baby you ain't taking. I guess that would make me evil, though. We have a hard time with the idea, especially today, we have the idea that you have the right to your religion and your culture. God doesn't teach that. No, you don't have your right to your own. You don't have the right to defame God's name in your religion. Even if your name's Joseph, first name anyway. So the Bible says that these guys were so bad in Leviticus 18, they literally defiled the land itself so much that the land vomited out its inhabitants. Now, you would be an evil person today if you went to a particular region of the world, whatever, and killed all the little bunnies or all the little animals of some way, or cut down the entire forest, that you've done that much harm to the land, they would find a way to stop you. But you can have a religion that says, kill everybody else that isn't your religion. Go find them. Don't just do it at your home. Go find them. No, you can't judge that. But I can judge whether you cut down too many trees or not and call you evil. Oh, jeez. Okay. Deuteronomy 9 and 4 says this: do not say in your heart, when the Lord your God has driven them out of the land before you. Listen to what he says to Israel. Don't think it's because of your own righteousness that the Lord has brought me and possessed this land. Here's why God sent them into the land to possess it. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is dispossessing them before you. Oh, wait a minute, Israel. Don't get arrogant. Don't think you're such a wonderful people. Later in this same passage, he calls them a bunch of stubborn, stiff-necked people. But it's because of their wickedness. So let me ask you a question. What our Navy SEALs did to Osama bin Laden, right or wrong? I don't know about you, I wish they'd have caught him sooner. But another example is that our own government, before they killed anybody, remember David Koresh and the Branch Davidians? Anybody remember that? Just because they thought they were a threat, our government got involved in it. Now, accident or not, how the people died, that's not the issue. But even when our government looked at a religion, back in them days anyway, that they thought was armed and prepared to do harm against the country, our government stepped into the picture. But more than that, I want you to imagine World War II Germany. Anybody ever seen pictures of Dresden? We wiped it off the map. Not just us, the Allies in general. I think it was maybe the British that started doing it first. We turned to what's called daylight saturation bombing. Did you know babies died in that? Did you know women died in that? Old people died in that? But I also know this. When they liberated the camps, you know what the soldiers went and done under Eisenhower's direction? Go get the people that live in this town right next door, and you drag them in here to see this before we clean it up. Because he knew there was some, at least some culpability for that process. Should we have let Adolf Hitler just go? But innocents got killed. I mean, come on. How many people did they say died during World War II in Europe? 40 million or something. I forget the numbers. And then most of those weren't soldiers, especially in the Soviet Union. They lost millions. If you want to read some good stuff on what is called the doctrine or the philosophy of just war, you can read what's called Reinhold Niebuhr. He was a philosopher and theologian in the United States, became into fame in the 40s and 50s. His book, Christianity and the Power of Politics. Or you can go read Augustine, Contra Faustium. Those are two places to read where we sort of draw our modern idea of just war. I thought I'd pass that on to you. Should we as a country or another country? What's interesting is Tim and I go to Cambodia. The Khmer Rouge there killed 2-3 million people. So you go there today, the people are young because all the old people were killed. We did nothing about it. Anybody know who came and liberated the people of Cambodia? Vietnam. Vietnam, communist country. After that, people we had a long war with said, hey, you can't let this go on. They even knew you couldn't do that. God is telling Israel, you can't let this type of thing go on, especially within your borders or close proximity. Here's the problem many others have. What about the children? Infanticide, killing children. Well, you got to understand the Bible's view of children, first of all, in Deuteronomy chapter 1 and Isaiah chapter 7. It talks about those who are too young to have knowledge of good and evil, how God treats those in 2 Samuel, which we'll get to. David himself says of his own child that he will see his child again. We read from Psalm, David knows where he's going when he dies. He knows he's going to see his child in eternity with God. Now, let me ask you a question. Now, this is going to be hard for us to grasp. Okay? Child A. Allow child A to grow up where they practice necromancy. That's communication with the dead. Okay? Modern term, zombies. Witchcraft, all kinds of sexual immorality, and then let them go to hell for living that way. This is going to be hard for us. Wait a minute. But if God took them in this case, in that culture, where are they? In eternity with Christ. Is it more loving, maybe? I mean, it's a hard one. I know this is difficult. I would rather see my kids grow up and have a chance to sin, I guess. That's where I come from. I love my kids. But I don't also live in that culture. I just want you to think about it. That's more of a philosophical pondering than a scriptural one. Then the next thing you got to consider is God's forbearance or patience. Back in Genesis 15, God says to Abraham that for 400 years, after 400 years, your children's children are going to return to this place, and then you'll get the land that I promised you will come. Because here's why. For the iniquity of the people are not yet complete. King James, the measure of their wickedness is not fulfilled yet. In other words, they got 400 years to figure it out. But I'm telling you, Abe, they ain't going to figure it out, and they're just going to become more wicked and more wicked and more wicked. For God could have used Abraham. And there's a story in there where Abraham goes to free Lot. Anybody know that story? And Abraham's army wins everywhere it goes, All right? He gives them 400 years. And not just 400 years. He makes sure that they're in the strongest power on the planet that we know of in Western culture, even more so than anywhere else, maybe besides China, I don't know. And has them held captive in Egypt, shows himself mightier than the armies of Egypt. And the people in that land hear of it and know it. Because we know when Israel shows up, they said, we heard what God did down there in Egypt. So not only does he give them 400 years, he shows himself mightier than any army on the planet. And so one of the things that God said, the Bible says about the Amalekites, is they did not fear God. They saw what happened in Egypt, you know, and snubbed their noses at God and says, I'm going to attack your people anyway. So God was patient and forbearing with them for quite a long time. I want you to understand God is not treating the Amalekites any different than he treats any other nation. And I will use Israel as the example. God commanded that Israelites, if they get in adultery, what's the punishment? Death. Matter of fact, Israel turned itself from Christ so severely, and Christ predicted this, in 70 AD, the Jews were so wiped out, you couldn't find a place called Israel on a map for 1900 years. So God's not going to, I'm going to do this to Amalekites, but Israel's special. No, no, no. When they turned their back on God, they got it too. And when we do, see, here's what the part bothers us though. Who was it that destroyed the temple? Who was it that put the Israelites out of their land for 1900 years? Romans. Pagan, idol, worshipers. That's the part we don't like. We think God only uses good Christian people. God used Nebuchadnezzar, the Assyrians, and all kinds of people to bring judgment on Israel when Israel didn't hear what was going on here.
This is Pastor Randy Reams of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. I want to thank you for joining us today for Truths from God's Unchanging Word. This broadcast is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church. I'd like to invite you also to visit our website, kindredbible.org. There you can listen to today's broadcast as well as previous broadcast. If you're being ministered to by the broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to let us know. You can email us at info@kindredbible.org, or you can write to us at Kindred Bible Church, P.O. Box 32, Nampa, Idaho 83653. And I'd like you also to check us out on Facebook. Look at us over there and give us a like. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Truths from God's Unchanging Word.